Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
We are 15 years into this new century. 15 years that dawned with terror touching our shores, that unfolded with a new generation fighting two long and costly wars, that saw a vicious recession spread across our nation and the world. It has been and still is a hard time for many. But tonight, we turn the page. Tonight, after a breakthrough year for America, our economy is growing and creating jobs at the fastest pace since 1999. Our unemployment rate is now lower than it was before the financial crisis. More of our kids are graduating than ever before. More of our people are insured than ever before.
All right, the president and the State of the Union address. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. We'll have lots of reaction on the State of the Union, including from you, as many immediately jumped on the email and the internet and sent me emails, so the mailbag is full. In fact, we're going to hit the mailbag in our next segment. Plus, we'll talk to Luke Vargas on the foreign policy points of view, the things that Obama talked about in his speech. You heard what he mentioned there at the top, and also a conversation with a Sergeant Stephanie Shannon, who talks about what she's doing to help veterans who have come back and have PTSD and all kinds of other things, and how rough it was for her when she came back from her service. In our second hour, Jim DeFelice, the author of American Sniper, will join us. Can't wait for that, to talk about Chris Kyle and his service. And we'll also chat with Horace Cooper, who has his own thoughts about what the president had to say in the State of the Union and where he really missed. Most of it, as Horace will say, it was about raising money, raising taxes, and this whole idea of the middle class and regulation. And certainly that's one thing that most Americans don't want to hear, especially in an entrepreneurial society. So there were some highlights. There were some areas, I think, where Americans could agree, and there were some misses. Luke Vargas, who couldn't be more liberal, didn't agree with a lot of what the president left out and left on the table for the taking by not specifically addressing a couple of main areas, especially when it comes to cybersecurity, for example, and Horace Cooper talked about that as well. First, you know, we have all the regulation and, of course, what happened with the NSA. We go through that process. And now something completely different is being pitched out. But what does it all mean? What does that mean for you and me? And how are we going to be kept safer from cybersecurity when you think of all the identity ripoff, credit card ripoff? I've been a victim of that. Many of you have been a victim of that. Of course, we saw what happened with Sony. We saw what happened with CENTCOM. We've exposed soldiers and Social Security numbers and all kinds of things. So I think, yes, it has dawned on us that cybersecurity is incredibly important, but also at the same time, what is it that we're willing to give up? What is it that we're going to do to make a very big change? And what would you say, or what would you give, what kind of grade would you give the State of the Union? Would you give it high marks? Would you give it low marks, or somewhere in between? I mean, there wasn't, you know, there was some vague promises, but not so much on promises. And I think, as you heard there, it was more about, okay, here's what we've accomplished, and this is a little bit of where we're headed. But even though discussions over unemployment continue, we still have people who are underemployed, and we still have people that are having problems making ends meet. And a lot of this, again, goes back to entrepreneurs. So the tax plan was definitely pushed. That was one of the main themes in the State of the Union. And a couple of other things throughout the entire hour plus, because it was a pretty long, actually, State of the Union, if you want to look at it from, you know, that point of view. And we'll get into more of the meat of it as we move along here. Joni Ernst, the senator from Iowa, had the, if you call it the Republican response, she had the Republican response. And what was great about Joni Ernst is she said, I'm not going to talk about the State of the Union. I'm going to talk about what Republicans are thinking needs to happen. And she went into all of that. And I thought that was great. So it wasn't like, well, he said that and Obama promised this and this hasn't happened and we think this isn't the right priority and all that kind of stuff. It was more, this is what, how we view what has to happen in the future. We heard you in November, and bravo to her for not just completely bagging on the prez, and instead just focusing on, here's what the Republicans have come up with. And I think that was intentional. When they met in Hershey, I guarantee that's one of the things that they talked about, that there's no reason to go ugly. No reason, even if though it's popular, to go and take the points and squash them. Why not say, here's what we see, here's what we think? Because they knew ultimately what the themes were going to be anyway. They knew that. They knew what the broad parts were of the State of the Union. Cybersecurity certainly was going to be one of them. Efforts against ISIL was going to be another one, and what we were doing as far as blowback to ISIL and stopping them. So none of that was, you know, none of that was a surprise. So they certainly could form their own response as to where they see them, where they see the country really needs to move. And I thought that was pretty interesting. You can always weigh in on America Tonight. Join us in our next hour, especially at the top, with your thoughts and opinions on the State of the Union. At 855-266-5283, 855-266-5283, and we'll talk A to Z about some of the reaction and what the president gets out of this State of the Union. And in some ways, I thought it would be more hard-hitting, but maybe that was the idea. Hey, I'm already in the place. I don't have to say anything about it. And there was nothing said about Yemen, which is the hornet's nest, when you talk about terrorism, which was really surprising to me. And I think this is one of the things that Luke Vargas will talk about. And, of course, while all this conversation is happening, rebels seize the Yemen palace. And there's been nothing but training and some horrible things that have come out of that area. We've had our terrorism expert, Jeff Atticott, talk about Yemen for a very long time and how to be incredibly concerned. And he said this for years as to where things have shifted. Plus, no mention whatsoever of Al-Qaeda. Buckle up. Three great segments coming up, including your thoughts from the mailbag. Also, Luke Vargas, and we're going to introduce you to Sergeant Stephanie Shannon, coming up on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment solid basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common-sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full-color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. Day, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Having lots to say about the president's speech, upcoming speech, because some of the snippets of it were released to the public. Of course, I had a transcript prior to the president actually hitting the marks, and that's because unprecedentedly, they sent out everything with the State of the Union to journalists. So how about that? I've gotten little snippets before, but never this. And certainly some of you are aware of the snippets. And let me just tell you about a couple of them, because these hit you hard. One was Iraq and Syria. One was the lack of specifics on cybersecurity. Another was about taxation, for sure. So on that note, let's turn to the America Tonight mailbag.
You have mail, mistress.
This one is from Sean, and Sean says, Kate, you know, I don't really hate Obama. I don't get when people call your show, no offense, Dan in Texas, hard right turn. Izzy, who I think is smart, hard right turn. I don't get when people just trash Obama. It's like we're in a playground, and they're throwing rocks at him, and that's just lame. And they're smarter than that, both of them. But I understand how furious they are with the things that this president has done. And it seemed to me, in most of his State of the Union address, when he really has the chance to go for the jugular, because, hey, he's not running again, right? He did anything but. I mean, he didn't really say too many specifics. He talked about cyber security and said, we're always going to make sure we do what we do. And this seems like this is a change of heart from what we've heard from Washington before, especially the administration, because of leaks, like the NSA leak. So I don't understand. Because Sony is hacked, because CENTCOM is hacked, because people are getting embarrassed in the government, and a lot of people are getting hacked, now all of a sudden, yeah, we're worried about cybersecurity. It seemed like they were backing off some of this. If I worked at the NSA, if I headed the NSA, I'd be very confused. And my first phone call would be to the president to say, we need to have a meeting. Let's go over some of the specifics that you're looking for and hoping will change in these next 2 years, because really our hands are tied with some of the legislation that's been discussed and with some of the things that have already been rolled back at the NSA. Yeah, change when it's convenient, I guess. I thought that was very surprising, too. I mean, let me pull a quote from that. One of the things that the press said is, and tonight I urge this Congress to finally pass the legislation we need to better meet the evolving threat of cyber attacks, combat identity theft, protect our children's information, really. And if we don't act, we'll leave our nation and our economy vulnerable. Really? If we do, we can continue to protect the technologies that have unleashed untold opportunities for people around the globe. Okay, so what does that mean? What are you suggesting that has to be done to secure all those very difficult things to secure when you're not monitoring people, when you're not monitoring certain information? And it's very tough to crack some of these incredible hackers. It's really hard to track them down. So not a piece of cake to do that in the first place. All right, here's another one. This one from James in Illinois. And James says, Kate, I have to say, I am a fan of the president's. I am. I'm a Democrat. I listen to your show, and I like the way you try to balance things out. But I think it's hard for Democrats to call in because some of the people that come on your show, frankly, not the guests, but some of the people that call into the show have no idea how to compromise. I would love to see what their personal lives are like. And therein lies the problem in Washington. And this is Democrats and Republicans, let's face it. So the president talks about booming energy. He talks about controlling our future more than any other nation on earth. We have to choose who we want to be over the next 15 years and for decades to come. Where do we commit ourselves to an economy that generates rising incomes and chances for everyone who makes the effort? Well, of course, people that make the effort think that they shouldn't have salaries that are stagnant. And what is he going to do? Demand that corporations find these people and pay more? So there were a lot of these bold kind of statements that, sure, that's what other politicians would do. I mean, it's not just Obama. Other politicians in the same spot would say the same thing. But because he's already won, he's already in office, he's fading out, this is his legacy, I figured this is the time where you can get tough and not give, pardon the pun, a crap about what anyone thinks and just say, here's what I think we need to do. I know some people won't like it. Here's how I think we should do it. Hey, it might not get voted on. Why don't we ever have that kind of straight, tough, normal talk? Oh, my friend, you have not spent enough time in D.C. That's not the way politicians speak. And let me tell you, the minions around them, the layers of people and the speechwriters and, you know, the chiefs of staff, not just for a president, but for a congressperson or a senator, they are petrified of them falling into a hole and making a big mistake and saying something that's going to cost them in the end. Especially if they're running again. Now, in Obama's case, he's not, and I understand your point of that. Why not just kind of forget the sugarcoat and all that kind of stuff? But, you know, there was definitely some kind of what I would call soft moments. Nothing really terribly hard. There were moments of applause. There were things that were, you could tell, were agreed upon. Obviously, cybersecurity, everybody wants to see that. I mean, what Republican or Democrat's going to say? No, we don't want to have cybersecurity. Of course, they're going to say that. All right, this one's from Jimbo. And Jimbo says, Katie Kate, I listen to the show all the time. I promise I'll call. I have written you before, and I have said that I will call. I just have had a crazy work schedule. Now that Shrimpin came back to life in the Gulf, It really, I'm coming out of that, and I am exhausted, dog tired. So I try to re-rack your show and listen during the day. I did want to hurry and get this to you because I saw a little bit of the State of the Union address. And I remember you were talking about the whole thing about middle class economics, and I heard the president mention the middle class economics, but to me it didn't seem to really spell out very much, just to say that the country does well when, hey, everybody gets their fair shot. I've been on all ends of that stick, and usually you got to know someone to get your fair shot anymore these days, depending on what industry you're in, don't you agree? Yeah, it does depend on what industry you're in. It depends on who you know. I mean, the whole idea of networking now and entrepreneurial ideas couldn't be bigger, and for a reason, because you're looking to the people around you to help support you, and small business is the way to go. That's why overregulation of small business, I am so against that. Let the people who have small business ideas move them forward, not to the detriment of drowning in hundreds and thousands of dollars of debt and bad loans, but there are people that can certainly make strides if some of those loans were loosened up, but certainly some of the regulation, the overregulation, and I get it, you have to have some, but we don't have some. We got some. A lot, in other words. All right, this one from Michael. Boy, everybody just jumped. How did you jump on the computer so fast? I don't understand that. All right, this one from Michael. And Michael says, Kate, I heard you talking about the Patriots the other night. And you know what? I don't like the Patriots. I know you probably have people that listen to your show that love the Patriots. I don't know. I don't say I hate them, but I just think they're so arrogant. I like fresh new teams. It would have been pretty cool. I'm not a Colts fan, but to see the Colts get there. And poor Andrew Luck, he just looked terrible in that game. You mentioned it a couple of times when you were talking about Nail the Score. And the whole idea about the deflated football, how darn ridiculous is that deflated football? Won't it be wild if during the Super Bowl coverage that's all they talk about and they come up with deflated footballs and they can prove that they were deflated? Yeah, I don't think they're going to come up with that. I don't think they're going to come up with deflated footballs. But the storyline was cockamamie, wasn't it? Crazy. Yeah, so that the Patriots would actually say, hey, look at the weather, this is perfect for us, and let's get in here and let's deflate these footballs. I mean, I think they felt, I mean, here's the thing you got to remember. I think they felt pretty confident, especially the way they had played the Colts before. I think they felt pretty confident that they were going to beat the Colts. I don't think they were looking for any trickery on deflating footballs. I mean, I know about things in the past, but that just doesn't make any sense. It would be stupid. There would be no reason. There would be no reason to take that risk. But it is a very, I have to say, it is a very funny storyline. And if I were one of the board reporters covering these two teams with not sexy, exciting, I don't know, headlines, because you have ridiculous amounts of media. I forget how many it is. I've been in the middle of it 10 different times in my life, and it's nuts. You come up with not the same old thing, and I guess this is one of the storylines, so there you go. Hey, if you ever want to email the show, do it, americatonight.net.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.
GCN, proudly sponsored by UnseenNow.com. Find out how to stop Big Brother in his tracks at UnseenNow.com. This is GCN.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document, worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE, 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case.
By now you've heard the news stories about police shootings turned into racially charged protests and police officers being executed in retaliation. These developments are frightening to say the least. The scary part is that now police officers feel like they have to form committees and hold public hearings just to get approval to respond to a violent crime in progress. They have to hesitate now and worry about being attacked by the media and the public just for doing their jobs. The point is, you need to be able to defend yourself, your home, business, family. Your survival depends on you now more than ever. Look, the police are being hamstrung. Anti-American forces are working to register and eventually confiscate our guns. Politics are threatening our Second Amendment and our freedom. Fight back. Get a Ghost AR-15 at guns80.com. Go to 844-2-GUNS-80. That's 844-248-6780. Look, there are no papers, no dealers, and no registration. Get your Ghost AR-15 rifle now. Go to guns80.com, that's guns80.com, or call 844-2-GUNS-80 today.
You pick up the receiver. With your heart racing and sweat dripping from your forehead, you finally muster the courage to dial the number to call into your favorite talk radio show. It rings once, twice, and then...
Hello, it's GCN. What's your name and the state you're calling from?
Surprised you got through, you squeak out.
Jason from Minnesota.
Please hold.
As you patiently wait for your turn, you begin to daydream about being a famous talk radio host and what it would be like to have your own show.
Jason from Minnesota, you're up.
Millions of loyal listeners worldwide waiting to call and talk to you.
Caller, are you there?
Cheering crowds surround you, calling out your name.
Jason!
Going once, twice. Okay, we gotta move on to the next caller.
You blew it.
Huh? Wait.
No!
Interact with the host you're listening to right now online at gcnlive.com. Click on the community link. Engage with other listeners. Ask questions. Start debates. Don't agree with the host? Let them know. Be a part of the community at gcnlive.com.
With Luke Vargas from the UN in New York City, so we can look at the President's State of the Union perspective from the foreign policy point of view, because that's a lot of what Luke Vargas covers. As you know, he's joined us in some wild places in the world these past couple of years, and he's covered some major, major big stories for sure. Luke, thanks for coming on as always.
You bet. I always love talking to you.
Okay, so we know that always Iran is floating around, and there's lots of opinions on Iran, and are there going to be solid negotiations, and what about nuclear aspirations and all that sort of stuff? So, you know, when you look at Iran, is this something you just, this is something the president kind of stays away from in a State of the Union?
You know, in full disclosure, and I'm not sure when your listeners are going to be hearing my words, the president's speech has not begun. It's only 9 o'clock here. I guess it's getting underway momentarily. But what's actually happened this year is that instead of just journalists being given a copy of the president's speech ahead of time, and I have to admit, you know, as a young journalist, it was sort of one of the perks of the job that you often get a little, you know, PDF of a speech an hour before it occurs, and you feel like hot stuff walking around before anyone else knows what the punchline is. This year, the White House has released the remarks of the president to the public before this speech. So I haven't heard these words delivered, but I have all of them in front of me, and I just got them a few seconds ago. So, you know, the answer is that Iran is very much a part of this speech.
Wow.
And I could have guessed this, because over the past few weeks, the president seems to have landed on language he's very comfortable with when it comes to talking about the status of these Iranian nuclear negotiations. And his portrait is that it's there are reasons to be optimistic, but more than anything, it's a very fragile monument of negotiations that we've created, if you will, that there's, you know, had been so much mutual distrust that to even be in this place where we are, where we've done, I guess it's now two or three major, postponements and continuations of these resolutions, we don't want to screw anything up. When the president was joined by David Cameron last week in Washington, the two of them, it was sort of an echo chamber. They got along so well, but they really agreed on this one point. And Cameron kept coming to the plate to go to bat for the president and saying, look, Congress, I can't tell you what to do. This is David Cameron saying as Congress. I can't tell you what to do, but boy, passing new sanctions on Iran would be very harmful for what, you know, both the president and I have built over the last few years. And again, looking at these remarks in the speech, he's continuing with that language. He says again that he would veto any legislation that would sort of put additional sanctions in the back pocket of Congress. He says, let's give this a shot. Our outcome isn't certain, but we know what the certain outcome would be if we pass new sanctions, and that's that Iran would walk away from the table. So, this is something he was very comfortable walking up to the podium and saying today.
Yeah, I got an advanced copy of that, too. And one of the things that he also said, and I'm not surprised, he talked about Iraq and Syria and American leadership and saying the military power is stopping ISIL advancing and we're not getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East. And I guarantee there's going to be people who have some comeback on this, because he says, I call on Congress to show the world that we're united in this mission by passing a resolution to authorize the use of force against ISIL. Not a surprise, I don't think.
No, one of the more interesting things about, you know, combing through these speeches is to see which hot topics of the day, if you will, slip in. You know, what are those one or two lines that the staff were furiously crossing out this morning and rewriting? And you'd have to say that Yemen would have been a topic that a country would perhaps have expected to see here. There's not a lot of mention of Al-Qaeda. If I'm mistaken, there is no mention of Al-Qaeda.
No.
That's a dynamic to this whole terrorism thing that I'm a little, I was hoping for more clarity there from the president, expecting that this would be a good opportunity to sort of reset what the real goals are here. And at least in my estimation, the biggest thing that Charlie Hebdo, the attacks there, has sort of made me and others here at the UN, you know, very conscious of is the fact that this fight against terrorism certainly isn't complete if you're only talking about it in terms of the Islamic State. And it puts the president in sort of an awkward position because he has decided to be at the head of the tip of the spear, fighting terrorism against the Islamic State, rallying together on paper 60 countries. But then to realize in a moment that there is a whole nother front to this war that, you know, I guess the U.S. is quite involved in Yemen when it comes to drones and the like, but we have sort of been ignoring, at least rhetorically, the risk posed by Al-Qaeda. We did not see if the president, barring any last-minute changes in his delivery, of an acknowledgement or a justification for what the plan now is to capture the full terrorist risk. again, I'm a little surprised we kept the focus on the Islamic State, not mentioning Yemen, Al-Qaeda, those really responsible for Paris.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. Of course, we know that Cuba was going to be heavily featured because you had people in the audience with ties to Cuba, etc. And we knew this was going to be something heavily mentioned. But this is a sticking point between a lot of members of Congress because of the embargo debate and whether or not that would even be lifted.
Yeah, I was a little surprised in this paragraph on Cuba. When it comes to democracy and pro-democracy efforts there, all he says is that he hopes this shift will stand up for democratic values.
Mm.
Really, as watered down as you could phrase it, as far as setting a new set of goalposts here. You know, this agreement that I guess the first few goals have been already reached, that have been hashed out over the last few months between Havana and Washington, included a list, evidently, of 53 names that Washington said they needed to see these pro-democracy activists released from prison in Cuba, and that would be a confidence-building measure. And now we have later this week the Assistant Secretary of State going down to Cuba, I'm guessing, to do a little scorecard to say, look, this is our first stab. It's been a month since we did this reset. How did both of our sides do? Are we happy with what we've accomplished? It looks like Cuba, on paper, has lived up to their, you know, pro-democracy portion of our first diplomatic engagement with them. I'm a little surprised. I wouldn't, you know, I can't say disappointed, but I'm a little surprised that the president didn't set clearer goals for what he's next going to need to see from Cuba in order to keep us moving along this path of warming up relations. To just say that this deal in its early phases stands up for democratic values, I'm not sure we have enough evidence of that. You know, Cuba has released dissidents, but they've also said, look, if you are released from prison and then you start speaking out again, you're going to go right back into jail. That is in no way a sign that Cuba has really changed its stance on a lot of things. So maybe this is going to be left to the back rooms in a few days, but I'm surprised the president didn't use this platform to demand a little bit more or sort of say what he wanted to see as far as reforms go in Cuba.
Yeah, I agree. I think he played it safe there. And then there's this piece, no foreign nation, no hacker should be able to shut down our networks. And I'm reading from his speech, steal our trade secrets, and of course he could change that, or invade the privacy of American families, especially our kids. We're making sure our government integrates intelligence to combat cyber threats, just as we have done to combat terrorism. Wow, so what does that mean? What is he pushing Congress to do? More legislation?
Gosh, what a tonal shift from last year when the president was figuring out how to deal with the public outrage about the Snowden leaks. I mean, he's certainly not afraid to essentially suggest enhanced internet monitoring as a way of deterring hackers. It sort of represents perhaps a view by the White House that there's been sort of American collective amnesia about our concerns about the you know, sort of Big Brother, to say that we need to now do similar tactics that we use to fight terrorism online, which have been a lot of surveillance programs, that we now need to almost expand that to another realm of monitoring, I think shows that, you know, the landscape has changed quite a lot in the last year. But again, that's right at the top of the foreign policy section, really, that the president very keen to play off of recent news events as far as cyber threats go.
Yeah, and lastly, because you're heavily involved in this, you've been to a bunch of these different summits, climate change. What about climate change?
Yeah, I mean, here's one where, you know, sort of the stakes are pretty clear for me. The president has two more of these speeches to go, and, you know, this one is one of them. And by the time he speaks again next year, hopefully, this United Nations climate treaty will have been inked and be going into effect. So it's not surprising then that the president spent a few big, long paragraphs, some of his best rhetoric on climate change. He said, you know, he's determined to make sure America basically follows up the action we've been doing domestically with leading the negotiations. And that's something important. That we've seen the U.S. and China announce those joint emissions pledges a few months back. You know, but sitting at the U.N. and thinking, gosh, you know, there are only something like 20 negotiating days. And again, not all negotiations happen on set negotiating days, but there is not really all that much time for these countries to sort of get themselves in the same room, start hashing out text for this climate deal. And we hadn't seen, even to this late date, many countries volunteering to lead negotiations. They would make the strong or weak commitments on the national level, but then they'd sort of leave it. They wouldn't say what role they were going to play in the run-up to these Paris talks in December. For the president to come out tonight to seem to say that the U.S. is willing to exert some diplomatic pressure to do some of the heavy lifting, and it's definitely going to be pretty contentious if it comes down to the wire. You know, it's sort of a legacy item. You can tell it's a part of the president's agenda for his final 2 years in office that it looks like he's now very serious about investing in. And you know, I'm very excited about that. We needed to see someone step up, and hopefully this is the U.S.'s moment to do that.
Luke Vargas, TRN from the U.N., thanks as always. We'll talk to you again.
You bet. Take care.
The knowledge of the ancients. tried and true trusted herbs and extracts fused with the latest nutraceutical science. Introducing the all-new Ancient Defense Herbal Immunity Blend, crafted with over 14 key ancient herbs and extracts to supercharge and prepare your body for what experts admit is the most dangerous season of the year. We have rejected hundreds of other formulations in our quest to bring you what is simply the most powerful and comprehensive proprietary formula that we have ever created in the realm of herbal immunity. For the last 2 years, our team has been working with top doctors, nutritionists, and chemists to develop the ultimate nutraceutical formulation. Experience the benefits of combining over 14 ancient herbs and extracts with exciting new advances in nutraceutical science. Now is the time to secure Ancient Defense for you and your family. Visit AncientDefense.com or call 888-253-3139. That's AncientDefense.com.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
Mom, I can't do my math homework. I just don't get it. I hate math.
I've always tried to be a good mother, but when it came to Jamie's math, I was at a loss. Then a friend told me about Math Made Easy DVDs. Concepts are simplified in an easy way to follow and review, and students can learn at their own pace in the convenience of home. Listen, in the frustration, call Math Made Easy. Call now, 1-800-USA-MATH. That's 1-800-872-6284. Or visit us at mathmadeeasy.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Oh, darling, please believe me. I'll never do you no harm. Believe me when I tell you, I'll never do you no harm.
What a night on America Tonight. You know, we have Jim DeFelice on the show. He was one of the writers of American Sniper, and he talked all about Chris Kyle and the, you know, what kind of guy he was and the things that they talked about and, you know, the whole sniper thing and coming back and how tough that was for him to open up and how they really wanted to portray that in the book. And DeFelice said he had to really twist the editor's arm to get them to allow, one, the wife to talk about it and to Chris to talk about it. And it ended up being such a great nugget and such a good thing for, I think, other military families to see. Well, now we have Sergeant Stephanie Shannon, who is a number one international best-selling author of the book Battling the Storm Within. She's got a whole bunch of titles, meaning that she's really good at what she does, right? She's been an entrepreneur, an inspirational speaker. I know about that. And here's the cool thing. A veteran advocate who has 27 years of experience in all kinds of fields. And, of course, you heard me say sergeant, so she was honorably discharged, a disabled U.S. Army vet who served her country for 8 years, including the 1991 Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Persian Gulf War I. Sergeant, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
I appreciate that being here. It's a great opportunity.
So you heard what I said about Chris Kyle. How do you feel about Chris Kyle's story? Because, you know, he has struggled when he came back with some of the things that you're trying to help people with and what you went through, undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder caused by, he didn't go through this, it was caused by military sexual trauma, but also Gulf War illness and some other things. How do you feel about Chris Kyle and his story before we dive into yours?
Well, to be honest, I don't know the specifics of his story. So to speak in details will be not as effective. But I am gathering that it's stemming from the post-traumatic stress disorder, lack of adjustment back into civilian culture.
Yeah, and it was tough with his family. He had two young children, and he couldn't focus. And, you know, what he really got upset about is that people didn't seem to care we were at war. They didn't act like we were at war, and he didn't understand that when he came back to San Diego. It was like, wow, I've had my friends killed. I've had to kill so many people trying to protect Marines. I don't understand why nobody is talking about this. Did you feel the same way or no?
Yeah, when I got back, the time and the trauma I experienced, you know, I experienced military sexual trauma, which is unwanted, unsolicited attention. I had two friends that were raped over there, experienced sexual assault, you know, went through all kinds of emotional, you know, abuse and neglected as a woman, you know, just psychologically messed up. And I came back, and I really think what it is society doesn't know how to help us. We have to be able to communicate that. And I think books and movies and things like that open the doors up for dialogue. But I lived like that. I was, you know, educated. But when I came back there, for one, there wasn't a system in place for reporting those type of offenses. Also, for women, there wasn't a strong sense of the services wasn't in place. And even a transition, it's often very difficult for various military personnel, depending on your experience. And I believe what happens is that we have this big gap in services, and veterans fall into cracks. So I didn't get the services I need. When I did come back to the VA to ask for services, they lost my record. You know,
wow.
I couldn't even prove anything. So I'm sitting here struggling, working, doing all that I was doing. As you see my background, I spent most of my time avoiding. But when I had all these symptoms and anxiety and fears and nightmares, you know, I had to compensate some type of way. And I think most of the people that experience trauma, they develop some type of skill, either it's addiction or, you know, some type of isolation or isolated. Everyone's trauma is different, but he's correct in that aspect of people know how to help, and the VA system has failed. You know, obviously over the years, and all these veterans are still, I mean, so many years later, so many wars later, it's still the same issue and no solution.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So how do we solve this? There needs to be more committees, more drilling down on this, or what?
Well, for one, it's awareness, bringing the truth to the forefront. As we, not to state a few statistics here, 1 in 3 women are raped in the military. 38 men are sexually assaulted every day. You have the claim process. The claim process is red tape. It's messy. It's very difficult to navigate through. It's all types of hurdles and red tape. So I think the issue is, for one, bringing awareness. People like me and other advocates that step up are not afraid to speak, you know, the truth so that people will know from a veteran's perspective. Because as long as we don't say anything, you're going to paint it into whatever they want it to be, and which is usually error and false, and it's avoidance of accountability. They need to be held accountable for everything and for every promise. If you say you're going to do this, do it, and in a timely manner. There's so much that needs to be corrected, and even in legislation, you know, there's a lot of laws that need to be changed. We have one now. It's called the Military Justice Improvement Act with Senator Kristen Gillibrand out of New York, and she's leading that. And there's, you know, sexual offenders in the military can get out and they don't have to be reported to Central Registry. You know, so you got rapists out there that aren't even accounted for back in the society. So it's a lot of problems in the system, but it's first awareness and truth and then correcting these and then holding the VA and the military systems accountable.
And this is certainly one of the sad things. There are 22 veterans a day committing suicide. Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to make you feel awful.
Well, I was at that point. I was suicidal and depressed. She wouldn't know it. For one, the military teaches you, you don't show emotions. You don't show pain. You know, you keep it inside. It's not like, you know, if you break down, oh, you want to see a counselor? No, they call you, you know, a punk or you're weak. So you have to tough through a lot of stuff and a lot of damage occurs, you know, a lot of trauma and combat. You know, people are shaken to the core and it's going to take a time for them to recover, but most of the issues are just very simple, but it's not them listening to the issues and addressing them opposed to assuming they know, you know, and not addressing it to the point where there's a change. It needs to shift drastically.
One of the things you talk about is enlistment warnings. Really, do people know, are they being told about the possibility of the experience of MST?
No. Recently, there was a lawsuit against the government of about 12 women, and they filed a lawsuit stating, you know, they experienced military sexual trauma, and they wanted to be compensated. And it was ruled that it was just considered an occupational hazard. So if it's an occupational hazard, shouldn't it be a warning at the time of enlistment that, you know, it's a possibility you may be raped? And even with men that join the military, it increases their chance by 10%. To experience military sexual trauma. So I feel you should be upfront with the recruit and the public. You know, the possibilities. We know, most of us, you know, when we vow, we basically write a blank check for the government up to our life. We're aware of that. But the other issues like rape and you know, abuse and all the other kind of psychological traumas, and I say invisible wounds, that's basically what PTSD is. You can't see it. And so, yeah, it's definitely a messy situation there.
Boy, no kidding. Tell us a little bit more. Obviously, you talk about this in your book, Battling the Storm Within. Was that cathartic for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What happened after I was working as a social worker there too, 15 years, I burned out. My doctor took me off on stress leave because I was taking care of everybody else and doing for other people and avoiding the pain. And then I ended up losing everything and entering the homeless veteran program. So that was a good thing for me because it allowed me to stand up on my feet. And that's when I started journaling. Like, you know, I did like 3 years of therapy. The book comes from 3 years worth of work. And it was for me. You know, it was just for me to find closure, to find validation. They should know. No one believes me. Every time I tell them and every time I try to, I always had these obstacles of trying to prove myself. So I felt like that was the time for me to speak whatever I wanted to speak with. Total freedom. And then I turned it around and used it as a tool to empower others and help others and show them how to overcome trauma and step back from life.
Yeah, thank goodness. What's your ultimate goal?
To be all I can be.
I love it.
Yeah, that's all. I just want to really just to inspire others to know that you can live again. You know, you don't just because you experience something that you can bounce back. And it's people like me that have overcome and just kind of, I'm here, I'm a veterans advocate to share with people that no matter where you are in the nation, I'm connected to like 60 other veterans advocates and we get things done. So I'm available for that. If you want to hit me a note on my website, you know, I'm here to help any type of way besides my book. But
how rewarding is that for you?
I find joy in it because I feel like it's my purpose now. Instead of living in that dark place, you know, I had to go off for illness where we're exposed to toxins and poisons and shot up with the anthrax vaccine, the depleted uranium, all that good stuff was in our system. And that's where it stems from. So, you know, I'm really happy that I'm alive and able to function and then be able to do something and change, make a change that in an area that most people will not stand up in.
All right. As you said, people can pick up your book, Battling the Storm Within. They go to battlingthestormwithin.com as well, and they can find out what you're doing and where you're speaking and all that kind of good stuff. Sergeant, thanks so much for coming on and continued success.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down at the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the Freeze Dry Guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.